Hello and welcome to Timeless Truths, a sermon podcast from St. Mark Ministries in Greater Green Bay, Wisconsin. This week we continue our series, His Final Steps. In episode 37, let's join Brandon Steenbach as we see how his final steps led to foreigners. So open up your heart, open up your Bible, and let's dig in to these timeless truths.
You probably know what it feels like to face something that is both unpleasant and unavoidable. Right, like that test you have to take at school. Or maybe it's that conversation with a coworker that you know is not going to go well, but you need to have it. Or maybe it's that you have to go to court or to surgery. You know, several years ago, I had to have a surgery that really I was very nervous about. Not because the surgery itself was anything all that major. It was actually a fairly minor procedure. Nothing to be worried about, but 17 years before, the last time I was in an operating room, I almost died. I wasn't able to breathe during the surgery then, and they had to bring me up out of anesthesia, and I remember actually waking up on the operating table before they put me back under again. And with that memory in mind, here I am facing another surgery, and all that trauma is coming back, and to be honest, I was terrified to face an operating room again. But it was unavoidable. In our text today, we're going to see Jesus experiencing that same sense of the imminent, the unavoidable, the unpleasant, but something far worse than any of us have ever experienced, because Jesus wasn't just facing an unpleasant circumstance. He was facing suffering, mockery, beating, whippings, crucifixion, death. And worst of all, that his Father's full wrath over sin would be poured out on him. To say he was uncertain is an understatement. And yet what we see in his response to that is this deep willingness to give everything, so that everyone can be part of his kingdom. Let's take a look at John chapter 12, verses 20 through 36. We're going to go a few verses at a time to see how Jesus shows us his willingness to bring everyone to himself. John 12, starting at verse 20. Now there were some Greeks among those who went up to worship at the festival. They came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, with a request. "Sir," they said, "we would like to see Jesus." Philip went to tell Andrew. Andrew and Philip, in turn, told Jesus. And we aren't told much about these Greeks, who they are, where they were from, why they were here, other than that they had come to worship the God of Israel at the place where the God of Israel is. So at some point, they had come into contact with Judaism, they had come to believe, and now they were here to worship. But they had also heard about Jesus. They must have known something about what he said, maybe the things that he did, maybe the miracles he had performed. Whatever the case, they knew who he was, and they wanted to see him. "Sir, we would like to see Jesus," they said. Can you imagine that? If somebody just walked up to you and said, "Hey, I know you're a Christian. Could you tell me about Jesus? I'd like to know more." Does that sound a little unlikely that somebody would just walk up and do that? Did you know that in our country, according to a poll this year, more than 70% of people age 15 to 30, not just church-going people, just people in general, age 15 to 30, more than 70% say, "I want to know more about Jesus. I just don't know who to ask." Maybe it's you. In this case, Philip and Andrew have the opportunity to show Jesus to some people. And why they went to Philip is a little bit uncertain. Maybe because he has a Greek name, even though he's probably Jewish. Maybe because he's from Bethsaida, which is on the Greek side of Galilee. And so they said, "Hey, here's a guy who understands us." Either way, Philip is like, "Andrew, come and help me with this." They go to Jesus and they bring the request. And here's how Jesus responds. Verse 23. Jesus replied, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly, I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds." Interesting response from Jesus, right? Here's a request. Simple yes and no, yes or no would have sufficed, but he goes into a reflection. Why? Because this request from the Greeks has triggered something for Jesus. Here he is in Jerusalem for the Passover, but really for more than that. He's been telling his disciples leading up to this that he's going to be handed over to the chief priests and the rulers of the people, and they're going to put him to death. But this moment, as these Greeks come and ask to see him, suddenly it becomes very real. See, Jesus was a Jewish Messiah, right? He was the fulfillment of the Jewish prophecies. He spent his ministry seeking out the lost sheep of Israel. But his ultimate mission wasn't just to reach the Jews. It was to reach all people, to save all people. And now a request from these Greeks, these foreigners, these people not of the tribes of Israel coming to him, highlights for him that his mission is about to be completed, that the ultimate step of his mission is here. It's imminent and unavoidable. So in response to their request, just from the outpouring of emotion, he says, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified." Wait, glorified? I thought he was going to be crucified. But if you understand, you look at all of Scripture, what you realize is that God's glory is wrapped up in his saving work. That for God to be the one who forgives sinners, who redeems the captives, who rescues the lost, that is God's glory. And so for Jesus to complete this mission of salvation is to his glory. So that's why he says the time has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. But he also knows what that means. That's where this talk about a grain of wheat falling to the ground and dying comes from. The same way that a seed has to fall to the ground, it has to, in a sense, die in order for it to bring out more crops, more fruit, more seeds. So he knows he will have to die in order for this harvest of believers, this harvest of the saved, to happen. Jesus knows it. He feels it. It's inevitable. So you can imagine that after this response, Philip and Andrew are sort of like, so is that a yes or a no or what? But Jesus has more to say. Verse 25, anyone who loves their life will lose it, while anyone who hates their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me. See, he's kind of reflecting on his upcoming death, right? He's sort of realizing, I can't hold on to my life. If I try to hold on to my life, what good is that? I can't do that. I have to be willing to let it go. But at the same time, he's thinking about his disciples' future and their sufferings that are to come if they're going to follow him, where he has to go. If they're going to follow him, they're going to have to go through it too. And like any good leader, he's recognizing this and he's sort of passing that along. Sort of like if you had a good boss who said, you know, this is the burden of leadership, and he explains it to you. Well, you know that he's only learned that because he's been there and he's gone before you, and now he's calling you to follow. This is what Jesus is doing for his disciples. Saying, if you're going to follow me, it's going to mean suffering. But there is reward in that as well. So it's an invitation to them. Follow me and see how great this actually can be, despite the suffering. That's an invitation to them, but it's an invitation to us as well. That if we're going to follow Jesus, there may be suffering involved. There may be giving up of something in life. There may be a release. You got to let this go. You got to let this part of life go. Now, for the disciples, they were going to be facing actual, real physical suffering. Maybe you as a 21st century American aren't really looking at physical suffering as a result of following Jesus, but you may have to let other things go. There may be some things in your life that you just have to say, you know what? That doesn't honor Jesus. That's not coming along with me anymore. You know what? That gets in the way of me doing what God has set out for my life. I'm not going to do that anymore. Or maybe you're just going to experience people being sarcastic or snide or insulting to you because you follow that whole gospel thing. You believe in that Jesus. And you have to be willing to say, you know what? I don't care how you feel. I follow Jesus, yeah. Whatever the case, Jesus invites us to be ready to give everything for the sake of the gospel, just as he was. Verse 27, now my soul is troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, it was for this very reason I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name. Now, if the Son of God says that he's troubled, we should probably pay attention, right? I mean, this is God in the flesh who resisted and endured all temptation, who ordered demons around, who was able to heal with a word, who literally walked on water, as we just heard this last weekend, who commands all of nature, and he's afraid? Yeah, because troubled isn't really the best word to translate this. The best translation, or a better translation, I guess I should say, is terrified. Extreme mental anguish. The Son of God is terrified. And so he asks the question, should I just ask my father to abort the mission? Should I say, Father, let's change the plan. Let's abandon this whole thing. And understand that when Jesus asks that, he's not being hypothetical right now. He knows the relationship he has had with the Father for eternity. He knows that if he honestly came to his Father saying, Father, I cannot do this, I will not do this, change of plans, abort the mission, pull the plug, let them all die, save me, that his Father's response would be, you're my son who I love. But Jesus also knows the consequences of that request. And the consequences to Jesus are unthinkable. And so he says, no, I am not going to ask that. I'm going to follow through with this mission. I am going to do what I've been sent here to do, no matter what it costs me. And so he looks to his father and he says, Father, glorify your name. If the Father's glory is wrapped up in this salvation work, then that means he's saying to his father, Father, you have to sacrifice me. Father, do what we planned for you to do. Sacrifice me for them. Verse 28, then a voice came from heaven. A voice came from heaven. I have glorified it and will glorify it again. The crowd that was there and heard it said it had thundered. Others said an angel had spoken to him. This is the third time in Jesus' ministry that the Father has spoken from heaven in a way that everybody could hear. The first was at his baptism, where after he was baptized, the Father spoke, saying, this is my Son whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Then at his transfiguration, the Father said, this is my Son whom I love. Listen to him. And now he breaks that formula. Instead says, I have glorified my name. I've worked great deeds before, but I will glorify it again. The Father's making a promise that he is going to do what is necessary to work salvation. And yes, that's a promise that he's going to sacrifice Jesus for sins. The Father is speaking to say, yes, we will do this thing. And understand this, that in just a couple of days, Jesus is going to be kneeling in the garden. He's going to be praying, Father, if there's any other way, but your will be done. And the Father is not going to answer him. There's no voice from heaven in the garden. He's not going to hear his Father's voice telling him, it's okay, Jesus, we got this. All Jesus is going to have is this moment, this promise from his Father that this is going to happen. That's all he'll have to hang on to at that point. But even this statement from his father isn't for Jesus' benefit. Jesus explains that, verse 30. Jesus said, this voice was for your benefit, not mine. Now is the time for the judgment on this world. Now the prince of this world will be driven out, and I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. He said this to show the kind of death he was going to die. So the father spoke these words so that Jesus' disciples, and so that the crowds gathered around him, and so that those Greeks who came to see him, all of them would know that what was about to happen was no accident. Jesus wasn't a victim or a martyr. This wasn't some cosmic crime against the triune God. This was not the victory for Satan and his armies. No, this was the victory for God, for Jesus. And Satan and his armies would be defeated by this event. And they needed to be able to hang on to that. They needed to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that what was happening to Jesus was not out of God's control. So God speaks for their benefit. Once again, it's going to cost Jesus something, and he knows that. And so he uses this play on words here. He says, when I am lifted up. Really, the word he uses there for being lifted up could mean to be exalted, to sort of be, you know, elevated, glorified even. So he could be saying, well, when I am held up for everybody to see as glorified. But it's also a euphemism for being hung on a cross. And so he's saying, in order for me to be glorified, I have to be crucified. My exaltation will come at the cost of my life. But notice what Jesus says is going to happen when he does this. He says he will draw all people to himself. All people. See, this is why this request from these Greeks, these foreigners coming to him, to see him, has drawn all of this out of him, because his mission is to save them as well, to save the people who are near to the kingdom of Israel, but not part of it, to save the people who are scattered far from it, to save the people who are scattered far from it in time, people like you and me. Jesus, this Jewish Messiah, is building a kingdom that's not just for the Jews, it's for all people, and he wants all people, including foreigners like you and me, to be a part of that kingdom. And he wants us to know, he wants them to know, he wants us to know that he is willing to give everything so that everyone can be part of that kingdom, including foreigners like you and me. The people don't really understand, not yet. Verse 34, the crowd spoke up, we have heard from the law that the Messiah will remain forever, so how can you say the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man? See, they've only understood the role of the Messiah through the lens of Jewish teaching, and at that time, the way the Jews understood the Messiah, he was a political leader who was going to establish the kingdom of Israel. He was going to live forever, the kingdom would last forever, and everybody would feast on milk and honey and good wine, and everything would be great. So when Jesus starts talking about dying, this doesn't jive with their picture of who the Messiah is going to be, and they're confused. This doesn't make sense with how we understand the God of Israel and his anointed one, and Jesus, in his typical Jesus fashion, doesn't really answer them directly. Look at what he says in verse 35. Then Jesus told them, you are going to have the light just a little while longer. Walk while you have the light before darkness overtakes you. Whoever walks in the dark does not know where they are going. Believe in the light while you have the light, so that you may become children of light. When he had finished speaking, Jesus left and hid himself from them. Now, if you were in that crowd that day, you might not have understood what Jesus was getting at. Light, dark, what is he talking about? But maybe from our perspective, we can understand it. Because I think we understand what he means when he talks about the darkness. We know what it feels like when the darkness presses in, when we're lost in a place of doubt or confusion, uncertainty, sin, trapped in an addiction, trapped in a cycle, trapped by a world that is closing in around us, the darkness feels like it presses in. And we also know the infinite difference between the dark and the light. Jesus says, "I am the light of the world." And when Jesus said, "I am the light of the world," he was following up on a prophecy from Isaiah, where Isaiah said, "The people walking in great darkness," friends, that's you and me, "have seen a great light." On those living in the land of the shadow of death, we know what that feels like. A light has dawned. Jesus is the light of the world. That's what he means when he talks about this here. He's talking about the light of the world. He's talking about himself. Not just a light for the Jews, the light of the world. This is those words that were spoken over him when he was just a baby. Remember when he was brought to the temple and that old man Simeon held him in his hands and said, "The glory of the people Israel and a light for the Gentiles, a light for all those who can't trace their lineage back to Father Abraham, but who are seeking the light, who want to be a part of Jesus' kingdom of light. Foreigners, like you and like me, people who without Jesus would never know the God of Israel and his anointed one. We've been invited to walk in that light because Jesus, the Jewish Messiah, was willing to be lifted up to draw all people to himself. He was willing to give everything so that everyone, including foreigners like you and me, could be a part of his kingdom and walk in his light.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Timeless Truths. Whether you're a first-time listener or a long-time listener, we're glad you could join us. For more information or to support the work of St. Mark Ministries, check out our website at stmarkministries.com. Be sure to tune in next week as we continue our series, The Royalty of Love. And remember, you matter and you are loved.